Thanks for tuning in to Good Vibrations with Kristen, where humanness meets spirituality. Are you ready to be inspired? Do you want to have a greater connection to the earth, each other, and ultimately yourself? Join in the conversation with Kristen Ace and her fascinating guests to share the light, laughter, and the illumination of good vibrations. Stuck inside staring at those same dreary walls? Brighten up a room with a fresh coat of paint. If you don't want to leave the windows open to air out the toxic paint fumes, here's great news. Non-Toxic Paint Supply offers non-toxic, zero VOC paint. It performs as well as the toxic stuff, and you can keep the windows closed. Find much more than paint at nontoxicpaintsupply.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Good Vibrations with Kristen. We have a very, very exciting guest today. We have the one and only Marsha Mason. I'm sure you all know her from her acting career, but she also owned an incredible farm called the Abiquiu Valley Farm. And she recently sold that, but she still is working with the herbs and the skincare line, and that's called the Resting in the River Organic skincare line. And it's amazing. I have some of her products, and they are luscious and incredible and yummy. So we're going to just chat with Marsha today about spiritual practice and move into that and see what you guys all think. So, Marsha, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. Happy New Year to everybody.
Oh, same to you. I'm so excited that you're here.
Oh, thank you. Well, it's such a great show, and I did it several years ago and just had the best time, so it's great to be back.
Well, we're really excited to have you. I was doing my research, and So anyway, there's a quote that I read of yours that I loved, and it was, "I realized a lot of my own personal sense of identity was wrapped up in my work. So moving to New Mexico," and then you go on to talk about why it's important that you did that, because you had to redefine and actually really discover who you really were. And I love that, because I think that pulls together a spiritual practice and a groundedness to the earth, and a really knowing who we are as people of the earth, but also spiritual beings, and that we are not what we do.
That's correct, yeah. For me, what I realized was I was working a great deal, loving my work, but when the work slowed down, starting in the late 80s, I suddenly realized that my identity was very wrapped up in the fact that I was an actress. And if I wasn't working, then I wound up experiencing somewhat of an identity crisis, if you will.
Yeah.
And so the 20 years I spent in Abiquiu, New Mexico, on the farm, which, by the way, was my farm, and the new owners are continuing to farm it, and they've renamed it the Abiquiu Valley.
Okay.
But out of my farm, we had the Resting in the River products and everything. Mm. But in those 20 years, by becoming an entrepreneur, by becoming a businesswoman, a manager of a Latino men, of a completely different world, which New Mexico is.
Right.
All of those aspects, as well as continuing to meditate and ground myself and be connected to the earth and being a good steward of the earth, I realized that my work is just one aspect of my overall life, and that it isn't my identity as a human being isn't dependent on what I do. And so consequently, I feel very healthy, if you will, and
right.
Much bigger in terms of who I am
right.
now.
And that's interesting, because I think people would maybe think, well, how could you get bigger in who you are compared to what you did with your acting career?
Right.
But the reality is, at least what I've come to feel in my own spiritual practice, is that when you have a deep spiritual practice, you are connected to the earth. You are seeing yourself as more than the human that you present. You're seeing yourself as this incredible soul that has all these different aspects of itself filtering through the human part of your existence.
Mm-hmm.
And so once you realize that, you are bigger. You have a bigger worldview. You have a bigger understanding of how important it is to be a steward of the earth. You know, I mean, and I think for myself, when I started my spiritual practice, I certainly didn't expect to come to that conclusion. But that's actually where I did come to.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And how, for me, I was an actress too, not in the same, I didn't prosper in the same way that you did, but it was still my entire identity. And then I had children.
Uh-huh.
And I went, oh no. I can't do what I was doing before and at that time be a good mother to babies and toddlers.
Yes.
So, yeah. And that I had an identity crisis. I flipped out. I didn't know what to do with myself. I didn't know who I was. And then I started having minor depressions.
Yeah. That's exactly where I was at.
Right.
Yep.
And as...
Also, too, I mean, I also had to struggle with the whole business, the whole film business.
Right.
And Hollywood in general had changed remarkably from what it was in the 70s and early to mid 80s. It began to get very sort of youth-oriented. The business itself changed in terms of how they were, how the studios were doing pictures and funding pictures and so forth and so on. So not only did I have to worry just about my own identity, also there was this added thing of age. Which is still exists,
mm-hmm.
and
absolutely.
It's really tough for women in my world. We just do not have, I think, a healthy attitude towards women of a certain age. We just don't.
No, we don't.
I mean, Europe is so much better for that reason. You see it in French women, Italian women, but, you know, and perhaps their cultures are changing too. I don't know. Maybe it's a world thing, but I just think they're the idea of, you know, it's like you gain wisdom as you get older, hopefully, and you grow, hopefully, and you get smarter, hopefully, and also sexually, you stay active. Do you
right.
know what I mean? Menopause doesn't mean that you no longer are interested in sex. And
it just brings a different.
Some of that is changing, but I can tell sort of by the kinds of advertising that's done on television now. But,
right.
But anyway, I would hope that we are moving towards a world and a culture that reveres women for their strengths, their wisdom, and their age.
And their age. And that's interesting because that was something similar that happened to me. Is that I was no longer being able to be cast as the sexy ingenue.
Mm-hmm.
And so then what were they going to do with me?
Right.
And then because that's what had been my whole life. But then when you have children, I didn't feel that same, my pheromones were working in a different way. And so I didn't really feel like presenting myself out there as a sex pot because I was breastfeeding and, you know, all that stuff. And I just didn't feel it in that time. And
right.
so I went through another identity crisis with that. And for me, meditation, grounding onto the earth, really getting my hands into my garden and finding a different way to express myself, I was able to balance all that out eventually.
Yes.
Yeah. Because
right.
for me, children just, you know, rocked my entire world. So I needed to find something that was going to help me know who I was from a different vantage point.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Do you do a lot of meditation yourself?
Yes. I met Swami Muktananda and was introduced to Siddha Yoga in 1974, I think. And ever since then, that's really become the mainstay of my spiritual life. And I was introduced to transcendental meditation in around 1970 when I was at ACT. So, and I had read Christian Humphreys, and I read a lot of spiritual books as well as some of the early theosophy teachers and stuff like that. I began to get a real interest in Eastern philosophy and religions, including, you know, Zen, Buddhism, all the various sects and, you know, different, there's so many different kind of schools of Zen and,
exactly.
and everything, and Buddhism itself. So, but the mainstay for me has been the meditation that I was introduced to by Swami Muktananda, and I continue to support Guru Mai, Swami Chidvilasananda, and I just love the whole Siddha approach. It's based in Vedanta and Kashmir Shaivism, and it's and the Upanishads. It's it works for me, and it answered all those early questions that I had growing up as a young Catholic girl.
Mm. Well, I'm going to have to say that I'm not familiar mm-hmm. with that. So, can you just give me a little taste of what that is?
Well, it basically is the use of mantras,
okay.
chanting,
yep.
japa, and the typical sort of Hindu sects. Om Namah Shivaya is one of the basic mantras that is used. Guru Om is used.
Mm-hmm.
Hamsa is used on the breath. And it's a lineage that started in ancient times and is passed down from teacher to student.
Mm.
And Swami Muktananda had a very, very great Indian teacher, Nityananda, who is very revered in India and in the world. And there are very different sort of schools that basically are teaching the same things or following.
Work with the vibration of the sound? Because I really, okay, because to me, vibration is the biggest key. How does it vibrate out into the universe?
That's
and
right.
What picks up that vibration? And so they're probably, are they holy vibrations?
Yes, and the whole idea is om is the primal sound.
Right.
And then also the use of the mantra and japa and chanting the Guru Gita is all part and parcel of stilling the mind.
Mm-hmm. Because we all know, everybody out there knows, that the mind just chatters away incessantly.
Mm-hmm.
And to receive any kind of divine guidance, divine thought, something outside of mm-hmm. ego and our base needs,
mm-hmm.
we have to quiet that. I have so many people who say to me, I don't know how to meditate. I can't get quiet. I'm always doing... And you're right. Those vibrations, not only going out divinity-wise, but also just giving the mind something else to do so the divine aspect of ourselves can mm-hmm. pick up the messages.
Well, what I love about what Guru Mai teaches now, since she is the representative of the Siddha Yoga lineage here, and they have a big ashram in up in Sullivan County in New York.
Okay.
But her attitude towards nature, it moves me deeply because she utilizes just the viewing of nature, a leaf, a flower, a raindrop, a lake, whatever. Even walking into Central Park, if you make that connection to nature, if you make the connection to the seasons, if you make the connection to the moon rise, to the sunset, she finds great peace and stillness in those experiences. So even the person who feels intimidated or shy or
mm-hmm.
Wary of utilizing a Hindu word, the idea of making the connection to nature is the same thing. And I think the thing that really excites me is that in quantum physics now, there is this joining between the spiritual and the scientific.
Yes.
Because in
yes.
quantum physics, what they're really talking about is all those nanoparticles and molecules and atoms and everything that are swimming around. It's simply our view that then creates the solidity of mass, so that the connection to divine consciousness, if you will, is what is really taking place.
Right. And that's they're actually proving that. They're proving that your thoughts
exactly.
create your reality.
Yeah. I remember years and years ago, Muktananda visited an atomic reactor site.
Okay.
And it was early, early on. I guess it was in like the late 60s that he did this. And so it was all relatively new, the splitting the atom and everything. And he was taken through this reactor thing and shown the whole thing and how it works. And according to his story, you look down a very, very long tube way mm-hmm. at the bottom, and there was this undulating blue material, but it wasn't even a solid. It was this cloud of blue energy.
Mm.
And he started to laugh because he said, the blue pearl. And what he meant by that was when he was learning meditation with Nityananda, one of his major experiences, and that became one of his major teachings, was that as you become a serious meditator, there are different kinds of visions and lights that you will see. And during the course of his education, he saw this undulating, shimmering blue pearl.
Mm.
And realized, of course, that this was the meeting of both the spiritual and the scientific.
Right.
Because he was beginning to see the whole essence. So later, when he became a teacher himself, he talked about the fact that if we could all see each other and the world as one and the same thing, that we are all divine consciousness.
Right.
We would have a very different world.
Well, and that's the key, is waking everybody up to understanding that you know, your spiritual practice doesn't just promote a healthy life for you. It promotes a healthy life for humanity, a healthy life for...
Oh, absolutely. I visited the ashram in India, in Ganeshpuri, a couple of times back in the early 80s. And one of the things that was so clearly apparent is when you are in an ashram or a convent or an abbey or some place where there is a concentrated spiritual practice happening by all the people, the energy changes in that place. For example, in his ashram, the mangoes were huge and delicious. The flowers were gorgeous.
Right.
And the vibrancy of the colors was just clearly apparent.
Right.
And I was just a beginner then, but it was so clear to me between, you know, what it looked like at the what was then the Bombay airport and what I saw inside the ashram was, you know, like night and day. It was very, very different.
But it's the same, it would have the same theory goes to the negative. So when you've got some place like in the Middle East right now with ISIS, the dark energy swirling around that group of people, what it's actually doing to their landscape, not just emotionally what it's doing to the people there, but what it's doing to the Earth's landscape, what will be available to them for food soon may diminish, you know, in a quantum level because it can't grow in all of that hatred and all of that darkness. So the vibrations are the same.
What's interesting about what you're saying is when I bought the land in Abiquiu, New Mexico, all those years ago, I didn't plan on being a farmer, but I just wanted to be a good steward of the land. So I started to learn a couple of disciplines, permaculture and biodynamic farming. Biodynamic farming was started by Rudolf Steiner, who was the father of the Waldorf School, and he was a lecturer. He was Austrian-German, and he said there was a direct connection between all the planets, as well as the sun and the moon and the wind, mm-hmm. and the planetary systems.
Yeah, don't you think
and that
makes...
He created a farming method called biodynamic farming.
Right.
And in Europe, and especially in Germany and certain areas of France, they do a lot to this day of biodynamic farming. And one of the things that's so interesting is that their hectare to bushel ratio was higher than traditional farming in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And I began to get really interested and educated in this. So we did the same thing at the farm in Abiquiu. I began to encourage the men, if they were not feeling well, if they were having issues with one another, if they were angry about something at home, I told them that they couldn't work on
right.
the land because that their energy would directly affect the growth.
Mm-hmm.
And what was really fascinating to me is that two men showed up in my life who were absolutely key to the success of the farm. And one was Emigdio Bologne, and the other was Cesar Barrio Nuevo. And they were both from Bolivia and Peru. And they had been raised in that same tradition of connecting, planting by the moon,
mm-hmm.
and making the direct connection to the planetary aspects
okay.
Of the seasons. It's such an interesting world.
Well, and it's actually an ancient practice, and we're just rediscovering
yes.
ancient divine wisdom. That's really what's
yes.
happening.
Yep.
And it's so exciting to have people bringing that wisdom back into our consciousness, because people think, oh, this is new, but it's not. We know this in our hearts. We know this in our history. We just have to remember.
Yeah.
And connect the dots. I mean, it's just, you know, just about animals, just briefly, if people knew how their animals were farmed in the industrial way and how they were slaughtered, because there's no other word for it, and then they put that fear and pain and agony into their mouths and then digest it and ingest fear, agony, and pain.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were to understand that you were connected to that animal, there would be honor.
Mm-hmm.
And there would be honor as we move forward with the ending of one's, you know, life system,
mm-hmm.
instead of just a mindless act as if that animal or that plant has no energetic matter to it, that it all matters because it's all connected.
Mm-hmm.
And so that plant gives its energy, whether to be a carrot and be eaten or whether it's a flower to smell, to make honey. It all connects. And I think the deeper your spiritual practice is, the more you start to really not only see but know your connection to everything. You know, and to me, it sounds like that's what your experience has been thus far.
Yeah, totally. Yep.
So I think how are we doing? I think we have to wrap up now. I can't believe that we are done, because that's very exciting.
I could talk on forever about it all.
Well, leave a tidbit of information for everybody. Just give them something to think about as they move forward in their days. Give us a spiritual lob, so to speak. Throw us a ball.
I think for everybody, as you're getting into your car or getting on a subway or walking your dog, take a moment to pay attention to your breath.
Mm.
And take a deep inhale, hold it for just the split a second, and then slowly release it. Make sure that you're breathing all the way down from your groin, all the way up through your shoulders and to the top of your head. Hold it for just the briefest of seconds, and then slowly release it. And that's a meditation.
Mm.
So if you would like to think of Om as you're doing it, that's great. And if not, it doesn't matter.
Right.
But I think just paying attention to the breath is a wonderful beginning. And what it does is it brings you back into the present. It grounds you for that moment. And then as you continue on through your day, try to remember that. You're going to forget it, but just bring it back into your consciousness.
That's wonderful. And I want to say to everybody out there, every time you do that, you make a connection to your higher self, which makes you move forward in your day in a higher divine way. So you're not as rushed, you're not as pushing, you're not as needing, you're not worried. You let go of the fear and you're connected to divine source energy, which raises everything up to a level, and your day goes easier, and then your life is easier, and it's easier to spread that joy and spread the vibration that lifts everybody else up around you. And doing that with a simple breath throughout your day, everyone can do that.
That's great.
And so I'm going to say thank you so much. It's a deep honor to have you here on GBK, and I would love to have more time with you whenever you have time to spare. So,
sure. Of course.
I know my audience is going to be very excited to soak in all your wisdom.
Oh, thank you very much. Well, it was lovely to speak to you, and I want to wish everybody a very, very blessed new year.
Oh, thank you. And the same back to you, Marcia. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, everybody, well, this was a very exciting show, and you've got lots of information, and you've got an easy way to connect with your higher self and be that vibration on the earth. So go do it, and I love you. We hope that you found this episode of GVK inspiring. And to raise your vibration even higher, visit my website at goodvibrationswithkristen.com.
And don't forget to like Good Vibrations with Kristen on Facebook.
What inspires you?
Write us, let us know, so we can share your ideas on the show.
And meanwhile, keep listening, keep connecting, and know that you are divinely guided.